Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the D word, depression, when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press, and Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now you know it and I know it. And there isn't one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? Now, we are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, he said, and we're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. John Swinton. He said that in 1880. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program, this New World Order. The men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. Let's wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and to survive this New World Order and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my 4-hour compact disc package? Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Depression, the D word. I covered the R word, recession, some weeks back. I was picking up some of the economic reports from the International Forecaster, the Privateer, and Kitco.com. And the news since last August is bad, badder, and getting worse and worser. And I thought I would make a report on depression, peak food, and the Rhodesian, or the Zimbabwe, as they call it now, inflation, and the housing collapse, what we call the subprime loans. Well, take a look at this. First item off of the page jumps out at me. He says, we see doubling again in food prices and a 20% increase minimum in gas prices. This is for 2008. This is the international forecaster. We see doubling again in food prices. Were you aware that the prices of food doubled? Yeah, in wheat, corn, and soybeans, the price is not in every case, but they came close to doubling in the year 2007. And they're expected to double again in the year 2008. Now, our government tells us that inflation's running around 4%. Write me an email and show me something that went up 4%. Everything that I'm buying, everything that I'm looking at is going up 20%, 30%, 50%. And in the grocery store, I was shocked the other day when I went down the aisle of Harps. I told my wife, I said, oh my God, look at the prices here. Fruit cocktail, $1.69 a can. Hell, a few years back, it was 69 cents a can. Now it's $1.69 a can. So it's more than doubled over the past few years, at least in our neck of the woods, just to give you an idea. Now there's a little bit more to the story than that. Over here on page 3, 20% of income is going to food. Now here in the United States, we're pretty fortunate. We only spend 20% of our after-tax income on food. U.S. household budgets spend 20% of their income on food, yet the Bureau of Labor Statistics weighs food at home as only 8% of the CPI. Food away from home is 6% for the poor. Spending for food is 23% of income. Well, you know, if you're making $100,000 a year, the amount of money you spend on food is only 7%. Then, if you're, you know, the less money you make, you know, well, then the more money, the higher the percentage that you're spending on food. So I thought, gee, could it be that we Americans don't know how to buy, nor maybe we don't know how to use the available money that we have to save on that food cost? There's a story in here of one lady. She's spending $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year on food. I thought $1,000 a month, well, that sounds kind of excessive to me. See, I live on a farm and we're kind of insulated here, you know, from the real world. And I don't deny it. That's kind of like President Bush. You know, when was the last time he went into a supermarket and did any shopping? President Bush and Laura do not go into supermarkets to shop. They eat at the White House and it's all furnished at taxpayer expense. And they eat nothing but the best. I mean, those guys are eating lobster tails, you know, three times a day. And they don't pay for it. So it doesn't really make any difference to them one way or the other what the price of food is. And when you're a millionaire or a billionaire, like a Bill Gates, what the hell difference does it make whether the price of lobster tail is $1 a pound or $40 a pound? It's irrelevant. But you know, when you're down here, you know, banging nails and screwing pipes together, you know, it makes quite a little difference. Especially when you've got two or three bread snappers out there that you got to feed, and you got a mortgage to pay, and a few other bills, you know, from time to time, the price of gas goes up a dime or 15 cents every month. So I can hear you because I do go into the grocery stores from time to time, but years ago I took a look at the problem and I said, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to want to spend a lot of money here in this grocery store and let somebody else produce my food for me. First of all, I can produce better food myself, and secondly, it's kind of fun, and third, it saves me a lot of money. It's kind of like fuel. We'll talk a little about fuel too. You see, you could be spending as much as $3 plus per gallon for heating oil that you're heating your house with up in New England. For some reason, you people up in New England like to use heating oil as opposed to natural gas or electricity or wood or something else. Now, I use wood here, and I burn about 2 cords a year. I go out in the woods here, and I just make my own. if I need a little wood, I grab a chainsaw and run down to pick up a load and come back up to the house and I burn wood. So it doesn't cost me anything. Well, you know, virtually nothing. It takes a little time. I can cut a cord of wood in a day pretty easy. And that's half my supply that I need for the year. For 2 days of my time, I can put all of my fuel. And I see people that are spending $2,000 a year on fuel to heat their homes. What if you could put that $2,000 in your pocket and heat your home with wood or something else? I mean, are there cheaper ways for us to do things? I was in the get and go the other day, and I bought a Starbucks coffee. Cost me $3.16. $3.16. Hell, that's more than a gallon of gas. And I didn't think anything about it. You know, I went out and jumped in the pickup, and I'm driving down the road, and I got to thinking about this. I says, my God, this thing costs more than a gallon of gas. At least here in our local area, the gas is still a little under $3 a gallon. It's not going to last very much longer, but $3 a gallon for gas and $3 for a Starbucks coffee. Now, when you stop and look at the average guy in the world, I mean, the average guy in the world, average, that is, more than half the people in the world live on $2 a day. Boys and girls, $2 a day. 3 billion people in this world live on $2 a day. Hell, I spent more than that on one Starbucks coffee. Now, I don't do that every day of the week, but listen to this. You know, legendary funds manager Julian Robertson predicts global collapse stemming from the bursting of the real estate bubble. And he predicts 20 million people will lose their homes in the United States. 20 million Americans are going to lose their homes in the United States. Now you're sitting there saying, well, that can't happen. Well, it's never happened before, but I'm not sure that it can't happen. Is that going to be unprecedented? Yeah, I'd say that's pretty unprecedented, but I'm just looking at the numbers here and giving you the report. This is from the International Forecaster. This is Bob Chapman, by the way. Saturday, the 12th of January, 2008. So, I mean, we're just talking about a few days ago. This is on page 10. Now, this legendary funds manager, Julian Robertson. This is a funds manager. This is an economist. This is one of the guys from Harvard or Yale or Princeton that manages one of these multi-billion dollar funds. This is one of the straight guys. This isn't the radical right. This isn't the Gordon lunatic fringe. We're talking about a funds manager, for crying out loud. And what did he just say? He says he believes that central banks, out of desperation, will try to reinflate the world economy with more liquidity that will create an inflationary spiral unseen in the economic history of mankind. And he sees utter global collapse. Collapse and disintegration of all infrastructures, including government. Inflation in triple digits. Failing food production and another Weimar Republic. So I'm going to underline failing food production because there's a neat prophecy over here in Revelation chapter 6, which talks about 1/4 of all of the people in the world dying from famine. That's pretty unprecedented. That's never happened before. We've had lots of famines, but we never had a famine that killed 1.5 to 2 billion people before. At least I haven't heard of it. Now, American consumers are supporting the rest of the world as other nations' consumption is falling. And he blames the Bush-Cheney regime, but they just represent the Illuminati. They now have a consolidation of money and power worldwide, and this free cash flow is negative, and the world is sinking in red ink. He says within 5 years there will be food and water riots, and he said the federal government under the USA Patriot Act 2 can create internal exile, and that's why detention facilities are being built to house 50 million or more citizens in the United States. My God, 50 million. I haven't heard a number like that, but not even from the radical right have I heard numbers like that. Hell, not even Alex Jones uses numbers like that. Now, there's 300 million people here in the United States. Now, if this guy, now he's a funds manager. I don't know what fund he's manager, but he's called legendary funds manager Julian Robertson. I never heard of this guy. And I would bet you probably haven't either. But I guess if I was in the international, or maybe even just the national financial or the economy, you know, and I was paying attention, you know, to the business report on PBS every night, I probably would have heard of this guy, legendary funds manager, Julian Robertson. Well, evidently he must be somebody that's reported on CNN or on the MSNBC or some television programs from time to time, like McNeil there or something like that. But did you catch what he's saying? Irrespective of who the guy is and whether you and I have ever heard of this guy or not, he's a mainstream guy, a mainstream funds manager, just as a guy that handles lots of money. I saw the other day where Merrill Lynch and Goldman Sachs both said that they're expecting recession in 2008. Well, listen to this. If you've been reading the International Forecaster for the last 12 months, Bob Chapman has said that the United States has been in recession for the past 18 months. The other day I picked up a paper, I don't know if it was the Privateer or the Forecaster or something else, says that the growth in our GDP is negative 38%. And I said, well, Jesus, how can that be? Unemployment's topping 12%. I said, well, oh my God, how can that be? Because I was reading the paper the other day and it said, well, unemployment, I just saw Katie Couric reported this the other day, and God bless her, if you can't believe Katie, who can you believe? Katie said that the unemployment rate jumped from 4.7 to 5%. Well, here's the way that game is played. See, when you get on unemployment insurance, you draw it for 13 weeks. And if there's an extreme circumstance in some locations, you might get it for 26 weeks. So while you're drawing unemployment insurance, you're counted as being unemployed. But after the 13 or 26 weeks is up, they no longer count you as either employed or unemployed. So if you don't have a job by the time the 26 weeks goes by, we stop counting you as unemployed. And so therefore, you must be employed. Kind of reminded me one time when I went down for my physical, you know, used to be in the olden days, you went down and signed up for the draft. Well, when I was a kid, you know, I went down and signed up for the draft. And then I went down for my physical, down to Oakland, California. And I'm walking along here with my clipboard in my hand. They hand you a clipboard and you got your record or your file on here and you go to these various stations. And so this guy, you know, he looks at me and he says, what religion are you? And I think about it for a second and I said, well, I don't have any religion. And he said, wait a minute, you have to have a religion. Are you a Catholic? Are you a Protestant? Or are you a Jew? So I thought about it for a second and I said, well, let's see, now I'm not a Catholic and I'm not a Jew. And I'm not protesting anything, so I said, well, I'm not a Catholic, I'm not a Protestant, and I'm not a Jew. And he said to me a second time, he said, no, no, son, you have to have a religion. He said to me, are you a Catholic? And I said, no. He said, are you a Jew? And I said, no. So he took my clipboard and he put a big X where it says Protestant. He says, well, then you have to be a Protestant. Handed it back to him and he says, go to the next station. That's the way that works. And with employment and unemployment, it has to work the same way. Are you employed? No. Are you drawing unemployment insurance? No. Well, then we don't count you. Go on to the next station. That's simple enough. We don't report people that are underemployed. And I saw the other day, too, where the average work week in the United States was 31 or 32 hours. Excuse me, kids, but I thought a work week was 40 hours. I thought we worked 5 hours or 8 hours a day for 5 days a week. So that would be 40 hours a week. No, the average work week is 31, 32 hours. They got it right down to, you know, where the rubber meets the road. It's 31.8, you know, 31.662 or something like that. But it's a long way short of 40 hours a week. So I just tucked it away in my heart, and I said, well, my God, that doesn't sound very right. Now, notice that this guy, again, he said he believes that central banks, out of desperation, are going to try and reinflate the world economy with more liquidity that will create an inflationary spiral unseen in the economic history of mankind. My God, that's a pretty significant statement. And building detention facilities to house 50 million citizens here in the United States? That's a pretty significant statement, especially from somebody in the mainstream. Now, if I heard that from some right-wing radical out here, you know, well, I'd say, well, you know, okay, consider the source. This guy's not a right-wing radical. Well, there's a little more to the story than that. Let me read you a short story over here that comes from a mortgage analyst, a mortgage banker. And he wrote a letter to Chapman at the International Forecaster. It's reported on page 11. If you want a copy of this, which I would recommend that you get, write a letter or an email to Bob Chapman. And what you're looking for is the Saturday, January 12th, 08 edition of the International Forecaster. I mean, it's going to blow your socks off. If you've been having a bad day, you better turn the radio off, because it's going to be a hell of a lot worse by the time we get through reading this little piece of information. Anyway, it's called the International Forecaster at yahoo.com. I think you could probably send him your email address. Now, I get this forecaster over our computer. Comes in twice a week. It comes in on the computer. Now, you can get it by ordinary mail also, if you don't have a computer. I recommend it. It's $160 a year, isn't it? $159.95, I believe it is. Hell, it's worth 10 times that. You can't get information anywhere that this guy has. This guy is an old-timey government snoop. He used to be in the security services. He's an old man, you know. He's older than I am. You know that's old. Anyway, what you want to do is get on the internet here. Go to the International Forecaster at yahoo.com or www.theinternationalforecaster.com is their website. At yahoo.com is their email. Tell them you want the January 12th, 08 copy of it. I think he'll send you a... tell him that George Gordon said, you know, get your head on straight and wake up and smell the coffee, and have him send you that issue as a complimentary issue. I think he'll do that. There's a section in here on page 11. It says, a fellow subscriber and loan broker has taken the time to write the following article to inform and to help his fellow subscribers. The article is fantastic, and we thank him very much for educating us. So I want to sit here and say, as a commentator, my God, I read this article and I blew my socks off. I couldn't believe what I was writing. Even the author of the International Forecaster said, now listen to his words, says, the article is fantastic. Bob Chapman said the article's fantastic. He's understating the bottom line. It deals with the subprime debacle, and it deals with the subprime debacle from the perspective of a loan broker. Again, one of the insiders. I tell you from time to time, the reason that we can get our heads wrapped around some of these issues is because some insider from time to time will publish what's really going on. Those of us on the outside don't have a snowball's chance in hell of ever figuring out what the hell's going on at Citibank or Countrywide Financial or Washington Mutual. What in hell does a plumber, carpenter, or electrician know? But occasionally some guy comes along and says, okay, well, listen, I'm a loan broker. Let me tell you what we're doing. Let me tell you what's happening. Now, remember, this other guy now, not this loan broker, but another guy says 20 million people are going to lose their homes. I think the guy's right. I think 20 million people are going to lose their homes. Not because Julian Robertson said so, but because this loan broker over here says, let me tell you what's going on behind the scenes. Listen up. Everyone has heard about subprime mortgages for over a year now, and everyone has blamed the subprime loans for the problems we're facing. But California, which has been home to most of the subprime lenders, has another tidal wave that will hit greater than anything so far and make subprime look like a walk in the park. We still have another year and a half of subprime resets that are going to be worse than 2007. But what comes after that will shake all of California. Did you grasp that statement? Let me read that one to you again. He says, we still have another year and a half of subprime resets that are going to be worse than 2007. So there's going to be another year and a half of this August through December subprime problem. So what's been going on for the last 6 months is going to go on for another year and a half. Then he says, but, did you catch this? But, what comes after that is going to shake all of California. So what's coming over the next 18 months, and what's happened over the past 6 months isn't very important yet. But about 2009, 10, 11, and 12, it's going to get god-awful bad. I read that and I said, what in the hell can this guy be talking about? The whole world economic system is about ready to collapse, and this guy says, well, this isn't a big problem yet. Now listen up. He says, you see, since late 2004, that's October, November, December of 2004, Wall Street banks came out with a product that took away a lot of business from the subprime lenders, so much so that my account reps from First Franklin, New Century, and other subprime lenders would cringe if I or anyone had a scenario to run by them, and if they found out that the potential borrower had a 620 or higher FICO score. Now that 620 or higher FICO score, because they knew they were most likely going to lose out to the pick-a-pay neg-am option arm loan. Now, I never heard of the pick-a-pay neg-am option arm loan, and I would just venture a guess, neither did you. So I'm going to underline that. This is insider double speak, you know, from a loan broker at a mortgage company. And he says they're going to lose out to the pick-a-pay neg-am option arm loan. This was such an unbelievable credit product that when I spoke to my rep at a WAMU back then, he said underwriting was 60 days. About 75% of his pipeline was the pick-a-pay loan. Why would anyone want to take a subprime loan with a 2-year fixed teaser rate in the low 6% interest rate when they could take out a loan that had a fixed payment at an interest rate of 1% or 1.25%? So he said, let's take a look at an example. Let's take a $600,000 house, which is pretty common in California. The loan amount at 6.25% interest only, of course, equals a payment of $3,000 a month for 2 years. Remember, most subprime loans, probably 90% or more, were done on 2-year fixed payments with a margin of 5%. So, number two, a $600,000 loan at 1% interest is $2,000 a month. If the interest rate was 1.25%, you know, then it was about a little over $2,000 a month. So let's take a look at this loan. It was a pick-a-pay loan where the borrower's payments were fixed for the first 12 months at 1%. After that, their payments could go up 7.5% each year for a total of 5 years. So with this example, you could take year one with a payment of $2,000, year two, $2,075, year three, $2,230, year four, $2,397, year five, $2,577. These payments were fixed each year for 12 months. After the fixed year, you are back to the fully adjusted rate where you would have to make at least interest-only payments. However, what is not being reported to you people is the fact that in a down market where home prices are declining, these loans have principal balances that are going up when the borrower makes only the minimum payment. In a market that was going up, which was the case when these loans came out, it didn't much matter to the homeowner because all they saw or were told was that their house was appreciating every year, so much so that it didn't matter and they could use all that extra cash in pocket for anything else. So most of these people, and I'd say about 99% of them, when they were pitched that product, they took these loans and they're making the minimum payments now. So now you have declining prices and the rising principal balance. Did you catch that, boys and girls? Your house value is declining, but your principal is increasing every year, and it's being tacked on to the end of your mortgage. Well, isn't that just real special? Well, we haven't got to the tip of the iceberg yet. We're just kind of tickering around a little bit on the edges here. So hang on, let me give you your mid-course reminder. And we'll be back with more on depression when we come back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we are covering the subject of depression from the International Forecaster. Now, the date on this edition again is Saturday, January 12th, 2008. You want the 1-12-08 edition, you can probably get a copy of it from the International Forecaster at yahoo.com. Send him an email and say, hey, would you send me that January 12th, 08 edition of the International Forecaster? Kids, this is going to blow your socks off. And if you don't subscribe, may I recommend that you subscribe? Chapman puts out this newsletter twice a week over the email. It's about 20 pages twice a week. It's 40 pages. I know most of you are saying, well, I can't read that many pages. Well, then read the highlights. If you don't read it all, at least read the highlights. Now, this is a pretty in-depth article. And the guy goes on with the arithmetic, and he tells us quite a little story based upon the arithmetic over here. I won't bore you with all these numbers, because unless you got a calculator in front of you and you've got the text in front of you, it isn't going to be very meaningful anyway. But the conclusion is, when you get through reading the numbers over here, the lenders are able to count as profit all of the interest that is generated, even if the client doesn't make the full interest payment. Remember the figure above on how much deferred interest is tacked onto the back end of the loan? Well, guess what? That's all counted as profit. And here's another reason why. The lenders know darn well that these people can only afford the minimum payments anyway. 99% of people with these loans look at the payment and adjust their lifestyles around that payment, thinking that it will always be that way. Remember, what does a car salesman say? What would you like your payment to be, sir? And notice what a real interest-only payment would be: at least $1,500 higher after this fifth year. So here's what happened. They knew, these mortgage banks knew. They'd sell you this house, and they'd sell it just like a car. They would ask you what you want your payment to be, and they'd throw out some numbers. Hey, do you want a $3,200 a month payment on this $600,000 house, or do you want a $2,000 a month payment with 1% interest? And so, well, naturally, I'd like to have a $2,000 payment rather than $3,250. And I can take that extra $1,200 a month, and I can spend it on something else. What they didn't tell you, and what you didn't figure out, because, you know, if you went to public school, you probably weren't able to figure this out anyway. I never would have figured this out. Hell, I couldn't have figured this out if I'd have taken my shoes off and used all my fingers and all my toes. The people that come up with these kinds of schemes are pretty smart people. And they have induced multiple millions of Americans into these subprime loans. Just like the credit card industry wants you to make the minimum payment so that they can make the most interest. Well, listen, the real estate guys were getting paid. Get this, they were getting paid based upon the profit that was coming out of this loan. So they had a motive to drill into you, hey, listen, don't be a fool. Don't take that $3,200 a month payment. Your house is going up in value every day. Take the $2,000, take this subprime mortgage over here, and run with it and save the money and make the profit. This was especially good for people that wanted to flip these houses. They're going to buy it, you know, this year and then sell it next year and take a profit. God, this sounded great, didn't it? Now, here's an insider mortgage lender, and he says, hey, listen, you know, you people weren't counting. You weren't thinking, and we weren't telling you either. Now, what this means is that about 20 million people are going to go upside down on these loans. And there's a reason for this. This guy doesn't say this, but I'm going to tell you what the reason is. See, when you people are upside down on these loans and 20 million people are about to lose their houses, when the government says to you, you got to have national identification and you've got to take the mark of the beast, you will line up to take your mark of the beast. Now, if you've never heard of this mark of the beast, you take a look in the Bible in Revelation 13. That's the last book of the Bible, chapter 13, about verse... Was that right? I think it is Revelation 13. I better look that up before I give you this citation. It's the mark of the beast story. And I think it's Revelation 13 here. Just bear with me here a second. Just take me a second here to get over there. Yep, I'm right. It's Revelation chapter 13. And it's in verse 16. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy and sell save he that has the mark or the number of his name. And here is wisdom. Let him that has understanding count the number of the beast, because it's the number of a man, and his number is 666. So this number, this mark of the beast, is something that we all have to have in order to buy, sell, and trade. And the reason that they put this out here was to put Americans into so much financial pressure that when the time came for them to tell you to go down and get your mark of the beast, you go down and get it. Now, they're not going to call this mark of the beast. They call it Social Security. They call it your national identification number, or whatever the label is. And you'll go down and get it, because without it, you won't be able to work. You won't be able to get a job. See, without it, you won't be able to make your mortgage payment. Now, if you want them to roll this mortgage payment over, you're going to have to do what they want you to do. That's the bottom line. Now, this mortgage banker, he doesn't say that. I'm just adding that in over here, because these guys did this on purpose. I mean, this is Citigroup and Citicorp and Merrill Lynch and all these big brokerage houses and Wall Street, and they package these up. They've been selling them all over the world. The world is going into an economic disaster. Economic disaster. I'll show you what's coming down from the privateer, you know, in future programs, tomorrow or the next day. But listen to what this guy's telling us. So by looking at this example, when I use a $600,000 loan amount, as California has some high prices, what loan would you pick? Pick a pay? Or should I say, what do you want your payment to be? $3,000 or $2,000? Do I sound like a car salesman? What would you like your payment to be? This comes out to a savings of $1,200 a month, of which you could spend to fix up your home, invest in something else, or pay off a debt. Doesn't that sound great? Do you now understand why my subprime reps cringed at the dreaded 620 FICO score? Do you see how easy a sale this was, since everyone in the lending business took on the sales tactics of car salesmen? Let's look at some other reasons why this loan was so popular for loan officers, brokers, as well as lenders themselves. And let's not forget the real estate agents. You know, real estate agents' side payments with low payments like these people could offer more house, as the real estate agents would say. Remember, when these loans came out, the market was hot, and it was very easy for real estate agents to push the leverage button on anyone who was looking to make a killing by flipping. So with the low payments, investors could afford to buy homes, hoping to flip them at huge profits. Because remember the real estate agents? Remember, real estate always goes up. That's what the realtors tell you. Real estate always goes up. Or just do the move up, because now I can afford a bigger, more expensive house. So many people did not factor in the tax base because when you buy this bigger house, the taxes are also higher. Now, the loan officers are the broker side. Because this was such an easy sale on the payments, lenders and brokers sold these, but don't let that fool you. There were huge profits to be made on these loans without affecting the payment. Usually, when one wants to make money on a loan, you either charge points up front or get it on the back end from the bank in the form of a rebate. So if you take it on the back end when the rate was usually higher or the client took a prepay penalty, well, with these pick-a-pay loans, the payment stayed at 1 or 1.25%, regardless if the loan officer wanted to make a profit, they would up the margins, which was nothing near subprime margins, and then tack on a prepay penalty. But the biggest factor was lenders were allowing up to 3.5% rebates on these loans without affecting the payment to the borrower, because the payment stayed at 1% or 1.25%. So look at this example with a $600,000 loan amount. If this was a subprime lender, they could have a charge, a higher interest rate, and could probably make no more than 2% on the back end for a profit. But the client would have a higher payment because the loan officer would have to charge a higher rate to make any money on the back end. And since the payment was based on the interest rate, it always goes up with the rates. So let's take a look at the dollars. The greed side. The $600,000 loan amount at 2% profit is $12,000. But also a higher payment for the borrower. A $600,000 loan amount at 3.5% profit is $21,000, but the payment stays the same at 1% or 1.25%, and that's the key to this scam. More profit and the same payment, which the borrower is happy with. Remember, the loan business became the car sales business. What would you like your payment to be, sir? Now, granted, the margins went up to make more money, but the borrowers in this day and age only cared about the payment. So what they're doing here, kids, is not telling you. They're not telling you the whole story. So you go in and you sign up for this deal over here, and they're taking a $12,000 to $21,000 profit on the back end. The back end, that means what's up front here is your payment, which is fixed for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. That's what you're going to be paying. So you took this loan out in 2004. So in 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9, that's what you're going to be paying, what you agreed. What you don't know is what you're going to be paying in the year 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And that's why he said, hey, we're looking at 20 million people over here being out on the streets. Now, the big mortgage companies that did this, they knew that you people out there weren't going to be able to make these payments. So what was their gig? What was their point? What's the end game plan over here? I'm going to loan you this money, and I know you can't pay it back, so why am I doing that? It's to give me leverage. I'm going to get you embroiled in this deal over here, then I'm going to come at you and say, okay, I'll bail you out. I'll save you. But here's what I want you to do. It's going to be something that you won't want to do, but it's going to be something that when you weigh it all up, you're going to come to the conclusion, well, I have to do it, Jesus. Because if I don't, I'm going to lose my house. I'm going to lose my job. My wife's going to divorce me. My wife and kids will be out on the street. Surely, Jesus, you must understand. See where we're going with this, kids? Oh, you'll line up and take your mark of the beast, all right. You won't like it, but you'll do it. Now, here's the sad case of where California is heading. Once a subprime borrower, always a subprime borrower. In the 13 years that I've been in the business, 90% of the people who are subprime borrowers stay subprime because they can never get their act together to better their credit scores or to stay out of debt. When the pick-a-pay loans we turned Alt-A and prime borrowers into slaves for the system. As once they get used to that payment and their lives are adjusted to that payment, they, or at least 80%, can never go back to the standard 30-year fixed loan. The pick-a-pay loan was the last resort people could take to save their homes, get the lowest payments to afford the biggest houses, keep more cash in their pocket monthly, to which they spent all of it anyway. They can't come out of these loans, and the lenders know this. This is why they're not trying to get them out of these loans, as well as they are making huge profits on interest that's really not getting paid. This was the loan program that kept the market afloat for the past 3 years. And when you take this loan and you throw on stated income, stated assets used to qualify, you can expect bad things down the road, and California will fall hard. These loans will start to reset in 2009, and they will continue to reset and up through 2012. Now, who are the lenders that peddled these loans? And why should you know? Well, because these are the lenders that will crumble with the housing market. Now, here are the top lenders who took these loans on their books. Number one is Countrywide Financial, which was just bought out by Bank of America, which now makes Bank of America the nation's largest mortgage company. Number two is Washington Mutual, and number three is World Savings. There were many more lenders, correspondent lenders, brokers, and mortgage bankers that provided these loans, but I would guess that 90% of all of these loans were sold to the top two on the list. Remember, these banks are using these funky accounting methods to call the deferred interest that borrowers are tacking on the back end of their loans as profit. So, are they really that profitable? Well, I don't believe it. Sounds like Enron nor backdating options to me. Well, here in California, the land of earthquakes, people have always heard of the saying that California will fall into the ocean. Well, we may not fall into the ocean physically, but economically, by way of real estate, we're going to fall into the ocean. The fantasy is over. And the lenders are now short-selling everything they can because they know not to believe in the National Association of Realtors anymore about it's a great time to buy a house. All one would have to do is to look at how many shares each week the famous CEO of Countrywide is selling and has been selling over the past year. Well, I think I've made my point. The question is, will it come true? I think so, and great thinkers like Bob Chapman have been saying it longer than I have. So I've put my money in real money, gold and silver. Now, this is from a fellow subscriber who thought you should have this information. So, there's an insider in the mortgage business, and I thought I'd share that with you. And that's why I use the word D, you know, the great D word, depression. Reason for using the D word, depression, is because this is being engineered. This isn't an accident. These guys, they didn't make these loans to millions of Americans on these houses because they thought that, well, most of these people are going to be able to make these payments at some point in time. Hell, none of these people are going to be able to make these payments. If you stop and think now for a second, you may be one of these people that have made one of these loans. And whether you made one of these loans or not, it's not really important. It's going to affect me, it's going to affect you, it's going to affect everybody, because the entire world economy is going down the tubes. The whole world economy. It isn't just going to affect Americans or just Canadians or Chinese. It's going to affect everybody. And it's a part and parcel with a plan to put the whole world into this new world order. It's called order out of chaos. So first of all, they're going to create chaos. a collapse of the world's monetary and economic system, so that everybody in every country and every place in the world is going to say, oh my God, what are we going to do? And the very people that are bringing this chaos upon us are going to come up with a solution. I mean, you know, the guys at Countrywide are toast, and they've been bought out by Bank of America. And so the good folks at Bank of America, see, they got a clean record. And they're going to come to you and say, now listen, we recognize your problem and we feel your hurt. And gosh, we're just sorry as hell that this happened. But tell you what we're going to do. It's true, you're upside down and you're going to lose your home and you can't make the payments, but look, here's what we're going to offer you. Now, up front, a lot of people are going to be displaced. A lot of people are going to lose their homes. And this is going to spread fear and panic throughout the economy, throughout the world. And then as time progresses along, people will riot in the streets and they'll get mean as cat dirt. And they'll want solutions and they're going to vote the straight Democratic ticket. Watch what happens in the upcoming election. And I think that Bush and the Republicans and Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are working hand in glove with the Illuminati, and it's a pre-planned program. Watch. Same thing happened in 1932. The Republicans so mismanaged the economy in the beginning of the Great Depression, and people were 25% unemployed. They were hurting. So Roosevelt came along and said, all you got to fear is fear itself. And they voted in a Democratic president and a Democratic House and Senate. And they voted in Democrats in the state houses and in the state legislatures. And the New Deal just put in whatever laws, whatever legislation they wanted. For the next 20 years, they just had carte blanche. So they could launch World War II. So that they could launch all of these socialist and communist programs of the 1930s and 40s. Programs that we're still practicing to this day. The 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. All right, now we're at the verge of the New World Order. Now we're ready to be melded into this one world government. So they start off in 2000 with George Bush, and they start lending money like you can't believe. And you people have been out there just eating it up. Just having a great time. Spending money like it's going out of style. Now you're in hock up over your eyeballs. And when this thing turns turtle, order will be brought out of chaos by Bank of America. The big banks that are too big to fail, the government will come in, nationalize all of them, and boy, aren't we going to have happiness and success with our mark of the beast in the New World Order. God, you're going to love it. Yeah, I'm about out of time, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll pick this up next time with a report from the privateer, our good friend Bill Buckler in Queensland, Australia. That's next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But meanwhile, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling us at the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.